We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, it's John and Lance.
On ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Now here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Good Thursday morning, 7 o'clock here in Houston, Texas. It's Lance. John is off. He's at a golf vacation. Dell's here, as always. You don't take nearly as many vacations as Sean Mapes does, Dell, so you... Or John, for that matter, and definitely not as many golf vacations. And Garrett Williams joins me again today. He's going to be with me here the entire time. You see him on Texans Stressings. You see him on... Or Texans Commenter. You see him on Twitter, and we are going to talk all things. We're talking sports throughout the day, so we got a lot of different things to cover. First of all, welcome in. Good morning. Are you watching the World Cup at all, like we're watching the World Cup here?
Yeah, good morning. Again, thank you for having me on. Yeah. It means a lot. But, yeah, I mean, I'll admit, like, I am, you know, a casual soccer fan, but the World Cup has been nice from the sense that it's during a perfect time where there's not much going on.
So. Right.
I have been watching it, and I think there is value from, you know, if y'all are like me where you're not super into it, to watching it from a more, you know, dumbed down level, you can kind of get some other observations, but I've enjoyed it.
Yeah. So I'm curious if you, all right, so I'm curious if you, so Dell's a big football guy, but all three of us are. I'm curious if you, now I do NFL draft evaluations and things like that, and I think you also look at guys like that too.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I'm trying to be like you. I got a ways to go.
Yeah. So, you know, I can't help but every, and this has been for years and years. Every once in a while, I'll look at how guys move and their athleticism and things like that, and I just think of how it's similar to different positions. Like I feel like the cornerback and wide, well, running back too. I mean, there's different positions in terms of how they move in the NFL or in football in general, where I see some, you know, you can't be real stiff in the hips. You've got to move laterally. You've got to have great agility. And so I take some of that into when I'm watching, like, you know, like a Harry Kane. He's a little bit more limited from England in how he moves with the ball, without the ball. You're not asking him to do as much. But I just wondered if anyone else does that who maybe – works in evaluating talent or athletes, if they kind of look at it the same way I do, where every once in a while, I know it's almost subconsciously, I just say,
yeah,
like I see the explosive, like when I saw France, I look at them and I see a bunch of wide receivers.
Yep.
Right. Straightforward attacking, straight line, some yeah. linear, some have agility like Mbappe, but they're explosive. They can get down the field. Then I look at, you know, I look at teams like Argentina yesterday. Just a bunch of slot receivers.
Yep.
Bunch of slot receivers and nickel corners.
Messi is like, yeah, Wes Welker or Julian Edelman.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then, you know, and then you have the striker, some of the strikers who aren't maybe as fast. And those are like really good possession receivers who are, you know, have great hands. And I just wondered if anyone else had sees some similarities. The match yesterday was unbelievable. I didn't. Now, Dell, did you rant and rave at the halftime of that match? It was 0-0, nil-nil, as they say. and I know on the broadcast, Stu Holden said this, and then I think someone in the studio said this as well, that they were just, this was really actually a pretty incredible game, despite the fact that no one had a shot on goal in the first half. And I'm not just being American who wants a bunch of shots and a bunch of goals and things like that. I don't think I am. I found the first half to be like a boxing match, especially from Argentina, where it's the first round and you're just feeling each other out. And there's just not much attacking. it's almost intentional where you're keeping your distance. I didn't find the first half to be this some kind of, boy, this was actually a great first half of soccer, despite the fact that you didn't have the offensive fireworks. Did you think it was, did you see things in the first half that you thought were just really great soccer or that you were impressed by?
I don't think I'd say great soccer. It was compelling. Just because
I
came in knowing the history, and if you don't know, then that might take away from your enjoyment of it.
What is the history?
They've played in multiple knockout round games over the last, I guess now 40 years or so, back to 86, the Hand of God goal from Maradona. Mm-hmm. They played that in Mexico, England, as you might imagine. Not over the fact that it's a clear handball for a goal. You have 1998 where David Beckham, like on the ground, throws his leg out and lightly taps the back of Diego Simeone's calf, who is the current Atletico Madrid manager. He has a player, he has a son on the team of this Argentinian team. David Beckham kicks out at him, red card. So
wait, wasn't he sent off in another match too?
World Cup match,
06? Maybe I'm wrong.
Ronaldo, Cristiano got Rooney sent off for a match, at least.
No, it was Rooney.
But
same guy.
Yeah. So in 98, that was Argentina, and that was England. And the biggest star in English football, maybe in the world at the time, David Beckham, sent off in a World Cup match. So they have a long history. And then you have the political aspect of it, and the Argentinians showed that when they brought that sign onto the field talking about the Falklands and the Falkland War from, I think, 1982. So there's a lot there.
That's just old beef.
There's a lot going on. So coming into
that's like a wife or a girlfriend remembering that.
So coming into it, I knew the energy. So Argentina did what they do. It was very South American early. What I mean by that, physical, we're going to kick you, we're going to hit you, and we're going to test this referee to see how much we can get away with to chop this game
up.
8
fouls between the two teams. I mean,
Fernandez hit Anderson in the head, didn't get a call. Got a foul call, but not a yellow. So,
I like that. I feel like that's what the U.S. should have done in their game with Belgium. They kind of let Belgium set the tempo. Like, why don't you push the envelope and put the pressure on the refs? I feel like they were too passive.
That's what I said.
Not to get detracted from your point, but like.
No, that's what I said at the time. The U.S., that starting 11, the one that did not play against Turkey, they had never felt this type of energy because they had dominated the games early. Sometimes you got to practice the dark arts. If you got to kick a guy, if you got a slow tempo, whatever it takes, but that is not how the U.S. play. It's not part of their DNA. And since they couldn't break Belgium's rhythm, we saw what we saw. Argentina, it's part of their DNA. If they want to frustrate you early before they work themselves into the match, they will do that. It was like a Como Bowl, which is a South American federation. It looked like one of their matches where they're playing Colombia
or Paraguay. They get chippy.
If they need to, they will go that route. And England didn't really respond, but they weren't out of the match in the first half. It is what it is. And then we all know what happened the second
half. Yeah. So, well, if you don't, Anthony Gordon scored for England the 55th minute. Good goal on a crosser, got his foot on it, redirect in. Just directed it into the corner. And then England basically, as they say, parked the bus, where they they basically sit back and let Argentina. They only possessed the ball 12% of the time after that goal. And Argentina, to be fair, had trouble scoring. But then England had two substitutions that a lot of people have complained about. Declan Rice comes out, and I can't remember who else came out. But I mean, you're going to have substitutions. That's going to happen. I didn't think this was necessarily the match for the big 6'7" defender. I didn't think he would make as much of a difference against a smaller, quicker. But what stood out is so you get into the 80th minute and Argentina still doesn't have a goal, and they are playing with urgency. Now so as in football. It's always frustrating when you see a team who hasn't done anything and then they get urgent. Then it becomes urgent and all of a sudden they can get right down the field on a 2-minute drill.
Yep.
Or get right. They're down two touchdowns with 4 minutes to go. And now all of a sudden they find their offense. It always bothers me. And the same thing happens in soccer all the time where teams all of a sudden when they become urgent. Now it helps when the defense complies and allow you to, and they allow you to possess the ball without a lot of pressure. But it always bothers me that teams show that when they show this urgency, whether it's in soccer or in football that we're watching, where all of a sudden you just, you know what? I guess we can create opportunities in soccer and football. I guess we can get down the field and score quickly. I mean, it always bothers me that you're just sitting on your urgency, or you have an opportunity, but is this just like a self-check on the playground where you just don't play on the, you know, on the front foot, as they say, and create? And it bothers me in both sports.
That's a good question. I guess maybe Dell can provide some more insight after my point here, obviously with this football knowledge. But to me, it's, you know, someone said online, like, prevent defense in both footballs loses you games. So,
yeah.
To your point, maybe it is sometimes an element of the offense just waiting to get going, or maybe the offense is getting dominated, but then all of a sudden the other team, because they get a lead, changes their game plan and now gives them momentum. Like, obviously, yeah. You know, you mentioned the late subs that they said on the broadcast, they brought in more defenders and basically went conservative. And then on the flip side, Argentina brought in subs and they brought in more attackers. And then they said basically once that equalizer was scored, England was screwed because now they had a personnel in to keep playing that same style where Argentina still had.
That's always dangerous in those one goal matches where you start pulling off offensive players, because if you get to shootouts, if you get to extra time, you know, you're right. They're bringing in offensive players. You're bringing in defensive players.
So they went all in on, hey, no goal or that's it. Like, basically they said, if they score, it's pretty much over.
Well, did you – like, I had no doubt once they scored, once Enzo Fernandez scored for – and that's the 85th minute, assist by Lionel Messi. I had no doubt. Like, I don't see how England can score. The momentum shift has been so dramatic and was so loud in that building. I thought they can't – England can't go, and they can't possess the ball.
Well, and mentally, you've spent half the game playing a certain style, and now you have to flip a switch to go ultra aggressive. Yeah. And I was going to ask Dell too, like to your point earlier about Argentina coming out initially, kind of getting a feel for the game, being aggressive. Like every one of their games has been a late comeback. So is that pure coincidence, or is that part of their style? And they know they can. Obviously, I'm sure they would want to take the lead early and dominate. But how much of that is like their style and wearing you out and knowing how to beat their opponent?
I wouldn't, like to your point, you said they would certainly want to be ahead. Some of it has to do with this isn't a vintage best version of Argentina, and they're making their way through the tournament. They know it's a long tournament. They pick their spots to get aggressive, to go after goals, and it helps that the teams that they have played have allowed them so much of the ball when they've needed it. You talk about what happened yesterday. Beyond the substitutions, the mindset of England was, well, we're up 1-0. We're here. Now what do we do? We're not going to continue to do the things that not just gave us a lead but held Messi in check. There's a compilation clip of all the touches Messi had after the goal by England was scored. And yes, it's Messi. We know the greatness of Messi. There wasn't a lot of pressure on the ball very late in that game because England had taken off any threat that Argentina had. You talk about their mindset. Well, once you see guys taking off, now you don't have to worry about a winger because you're overcommitted trying to score. There was no one on England who could put any pressure on them. We all watched the game. From the moment Argentina got possession in their own half, it was a pass here, and they could just kind of jog up the field and set
no
up again.
No pressure.
Because legit prevent defense, right?
It really was.
England did not
they
have
did the same thing against, but downs. They did that against Mexico.
Well,
they just
well,
said
there's
that's,
a difference.
I mean, Mexico was out of necessity, right?
Yeah,
they were down a man.
Well,
yeah, right.
And also, Mexico doesn't have the greatest player ever delivering crosses, so these are all the things that are different.
Oh, and his crosses are different.
Yeah,
one was insane.
So
literally put the ball right on his head.
So when you're doing this, you give them so many opportunities. Like Enzo Fernandez, the equalizer, he had four opportunities before then.
Yeah.
So if you
and
wanna,
they were close.
Yeah. So you want to talk about?
Oh my gosh!
Setting
your sights. They were close.
He finally got one in a spot where he certainly had more time than England would have liked, and he got that one. He's a long range artist, so it's all the things. No pressure on the ball. No pressure in Argentina's mind that there could be a counter since we're committing all these bodies. It all led to, as they say, a training exercise where all Argentina did was turn Pickford's net into a target. And they eventually got the two they needed. And it could have been 4-1. They
scored
close.
From distance in the game before, too.
Enzo, it was Julian Alvarez.
Julian Alvarez, that's right.
Who
well, to your point, though, and to Garrett's point, if you didn't see this, or maybe you did see it and you – I've never seen – the only time I've seen stuff like this is like youth league basketball where Messi, in the after the 80th minute, he basically said, I'm going to – and the entire team understood Messi's going to win this for us. We're just giving it to Messi. Messi would pass, and then he'd run over to where he passed, and he would, like, take back over. And then he'd and they'd pass it back to him, like, literally, like, from 4 feet away. Mm-hmm. And then he'd look to deliver the ball, and then he'd make the next pass over the top, and then he'd run back. They just kept giving it to him from short range. He would close the distance to make sure he could get it back to control everything. And then he stopped being anywhere inside the box, and he just said, I'm going to deliver crosses. And he went out to the wing. And his crossers and corner kicks are, like, insanely accurate. Insanely. He never blasted over the whole – like, I could not believe how consistently accurate he was in putting the ball – and these are little guys. Like, Argentina are wee fellows compared to England. And I'm thinking, how are they going to win headers? And yet they get their shots. They get their opportunities. Jordan Pickford – they had one hit, a couple at the post. They had Jordan Pickford made a stop. They had multiple spots. I mean, I don't know what their expected goals were, and I'm not going to ask Glenn Davis because that's going to make him mad to talk about expected goals. But it looked like, you know, they had five shots on target there in the last 12 minutes of the match. It was crazy.
The point you made, like, I think there is some credit due to the teammates and the team overall to realize, like, hey, we have Messi on our team. Like, yeah. No one else was trying to – that's just like a, you know, in basketball, like, give the ball to your bet, like, give the ball to KD, you know, like, get out of the way. So, like, kudos to the teammates for, you know, not trying to be the hero.
Yeah, for understanding that.
Yeah, I took a listen to some of the English commentary about the game, and they've all decided, and probably rightfully so, that was a game, a chance they gave away. And Tuchel, their manager's taken it. I think for the most part, they all believe it's coaching malpractice. If you've held them not only to a standstill, mm-hmm. but you have the lead, why are you trying to, as Lance said, park the bus for 35, 40 minutes? When you add in the 10 minutes of extra time or added time, it's about 40 minutes you decided you weren't going to attack Argentina. So you gave them every opportunity. And then you saw, once it was 2-1, England had no ideas. You talk about all the inch-perfect crosses by Messi. Once it was England's turn to try to get balls in the box, they didn't get an opportunity.
No.
It was all long balls.
They really had trouble getting clean.
Or they had their right back delivering crosses, a guy who isn't adept at that.
No.
So it was a complete capitulation. And Tuchel said he's going to stay the manager. For the most part, you listen to all these guys, they say, get him out of there. Why? Because he sold them as being aggressive and positive. Hey, we're going to keep attacking. That was his – because Gareth Southgate, the previous manager, who was English, who played for the team, they lost big games or big matches because they would go up and then they wouldn't attack. So Tuchel, just like we do here, like, you hired a defensive coach, then you hire an offensive coach. They hired a guy who said, hey, it's not going to happen on my watch, because if we lose, it's going to be because we're brave. And England was anything but brave, so now they want him out.
Plus, his post-game presser is like to me, like, I have –
no regrets is what he said.
He comes off as, like, smug and, like, kind of rude to the reporters. I'm like, screw this guy, dude.
It's almost like – I feel like soccer managers, one of the things I've noticed is they know if they give in and say that they made a mistake, the media, because this is these are Super Bowls to every other country. Mm-hmm. They're going to be – if you admit you made a mistake, it is going to be – you're really damned if you do or damned if you don't. If you say, you know, we probably should have played with a little more aggression, they're going to jump in on you there. So you're cooked because you just admitted you screwed up. And if you don't, you're like, you're this hard headed guy who can't admit that you made a mistake. But clearly they should have played with at least a little more aggression. Look how Spain is more talented on the ball than probably anybody. But England's having a hard time. Just, boy, they got pressed a lot. They didn't like it too much.
They had 11 throughout the match. 10 guys, include the goalkeeper, 11 guys behind the ball. There's no outlets because everyone's behind the ball. You don't have any players on the pitch at the end who could not only threaten England but be on the ball. You've got, at the time, probably eight to nine. Or probably eight outfield players who are just defenders, either defensive midfielders or actual defenders. You don't have guys who can be on the ball, make a couple passes, relieve pressure. It was a total a total annihilation at the end. And it could have been 4-1. The post was hit a couple times. Pickford made a couple saves. Bad.
Just like Mexico, they could have easily lost that Mexico game. I feel like the Mexico game, they had a bunch of chances. I feel like the ball just didn't bounce their way, honestly.
They just are not great at corner at trying to score off corners. But, England's going to be sick for – this is going to haunt them for a long time.
They almost got a goal late, too.
Yeah.
Their strategy late was just their goalie to kick it to their six, whatever.
Yeah, it
down
was just
there.
Basically Jordan Pickford just set up a hit ahead, a flick ahead.
One of them
header.
Almost got loose in there.
Yeah, no, it did. You had 2-on-1, and they got it out of there. So it's now your finals going to be on Sunday, right?
Yes, and the thing with the World Cup, and I guess any major soccer tournament, when at least. In a worldwide, like they do in the Olympics too,
third place.
England has to play a third place game.
God, I mean, on paper France. You think, oh, England, France, that's interesting. We'll just see who cares.
Yeah, it'll be 2 days from now on Saturday.
Nobody wants to get run out of the building. I would think.
But
do you get any like bonuses or money if you?
No,
win?
You just
like,
get
what's
a,
the incentive.
I don't know what.
No,
the,
but the over under is probably 3.5.
It depends on what the federation decides. About what they'll pay you. I don't know what the bonuses
are. Yeah, they do. Third gets paid higher than fourth.
Okay, I'm going to say, because as a player, you're probably like, screw this.
Yeah, there is some. I don't know if it's enough for these
professionals. Yeah, there are bonuses from the federation. Then FIFA will give you money if you finish in third, I believe. Also, it's only 2 days after this match for England, so I wouldn't expect to see the guys who are out there for 90-plus minutes. Like, I don't think you see Jude Bellingham or Harry Kane. It'll be the guys
not who, even see him.
Unless they decide they want to, but 2 days after this, you're going to play another. You're going to play a full or play 70, 80 minutes. Seems doubtful.
All right, we'll break it right here. When we come back, we've got the Houston Astros made a big trade. You've got the passing of I guess NFL. I don't know if royalty is the right word, but we'll talk about the passing of one of the founders of the Houston Texans. And coming up in a little bit, Tari Eason is at it again on Twitter. He's active on Twitter, and it's not great for Tari, I don't think. We'll get to that and more. Lance Erline, Dell, Garrett, we're going to take it through all the way to 10 o'clock. You guys can jump in at any point, 713-780-3776.
You are listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show.
On ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
All right, 7:24 here. It'll be a little shorter segment, but this is kind of an information-based segment here. And that is what happened with the Houston Astros yesterday. Well, we covered it late in the show. It broke that Lance McCullers was traded. And first-place Milwaukee Brewers in their division made a trade for Lance McCullers. They've got some injuries to a pitching staff. Lance McCullers had a no-trade clause. He waived it. He understood. I think he understands there's a chance this is his last year pitching in the big leagues. It's the last year of his contract. There's no guarantee he'll make a squad next year. I mean, the injury issues are just so prolific now that there's no guarantee Lance McCullers has a job pitching in Major League Baseball next year. And while I'm sure he'd love to just stay in Houston and would have loved to have just finished his career in Houston as a pitcher on the roster, it looks like right now it's just going to be tough for him to find. The Astros just really can't afford to pitch Lance McCullers right now, frankly. They have too many players who are up and down. Lance is hurt all the time. It is what it is, man. It's kind of a sad I don't know if sad story is the right term. I mean, the guy won 2 championships, and he was a part, you know, played a real part in both of them. But the way it ends is kind of brutal for Lance after 22. And he was traded along with Colton Gordon. It's really a salary dump, but the Astros do have to pick up $2.5 million of McCullers' remaining $6.727 salary. I just said the whole salary there. They have to pick up that much of it. They have to pick up $2.5 million of it. So it's a salary dump. It allows the Astros to have some room to maneuver. They got Jaden Fielder back. He's the son of Prince Fielder. I was like, wait, Cecil Fielder already has a grandson in the league? Like, Prince Fielder already? I had to go back and look at it. Prince had Jaden when he was 21 years old, because I'm like, Prince can't be. How does Prince have a kid already who's 21? and Prince is 42 years old. So Jaden Fielder is the turn his mic on, Dale. Yeah, hit that blue talk.
There you go.
There you go.
Got me. Yeah.
I looked up Jaden Fielder's numbers. I mean, it's nuts. He's 21, and in a salary dump contract, I'm like, this guy can't be much if you're getting someone for a Colton Gordon and maybe a small rental on an oft-injured pitcher who hasn't been effective for a long time. Like, what are you getting? And looking at the numbers, I mean, 3 home runs in each of the last 2 seasons. One with 100, he plays in low A. He 142 at bats and 133 at bats, 3 home runs the last couple of years. OPS, now his OPS last year, actually his OPS is over 800 the last couple of years, which sounds good, but it's A ball. So it's big deal. There's a lot of guys, legitimate prospects who are hitting over 900 and 1,000 in those leagues. So it'd be nice if he comes up and becomes a player at all, but this is really about McCullers being dealt, longest tenured Astro. Thoughts on Lance McCullers in a general sense?
Yeah, so I guess just initially it sounded like from comments from Dana Brown that, you know, this is them posturing themselves to make a move at the trade deadline too. So with that in mind, maybe we can kind of wait to fully evaluate what happened to see what they do with that cash saved. But yeah, like you said, it's kind of like a bittersweet moment. Like obviously Lance McCullers won us 2 World Series. He had the iconic moment in the 2017 Game 7 ALCS against the Yankees where he came out of relief and threw 24 straight curveballs to send us to the World Series. And obviously he won a ring in 17 and then 22. He was a big part of that as well. I think in 22 when he pitched in the World Series against the Phillies, that game itself wasn't good, but he ate some innings. But he did have a performance early on in the ALDS against the Mariners. So
in his time in 22 – like, he was actually good at the end of the year in August. He actually did a good job when he came back. It took him forever to come back. But if I remember, that was 22, right? Where he came back from the injury and then, because he missed 23 and 24.
Yep.
Actually, his August, he was only there for, I think, 5 regular season games, and he was actually good for those games headed into the playoffs. So that's not nothing.
Yeah, well, and he made an impact like that ALDS game with the Mariners. I think it was the game that was like the ultra long.
Oh, was he in that one?
I think he pitched like 6 shutout innings. So, regardless, like I know how it is as sports and sports fans. Like players get injured, we get frustrated. You could look at it like, he was just made of glass, or like, hey, he gave it his all, and like we got 2 championships out of it. So, it is bittersweet. Like I don't know that he would have. I guess there was hopes. We're struggling as a pitching staff. Like, let's get McCullers back. Hopefully, he can come back. I don't know if he will be. Hopefully it works out great. There was a good article by Chandler Rome from The Athletic kind of detailing he had a call with Lance yesterday about it. So supposedly he had the ability to waive the trade because of the 10-5 rule. He's been in the league for 10 years, 5 consecutive years on a team, so he automatically had the ability to veto trade. So Jim Crane reached out to him. And his comments about that to me is like what's really special is, he gave effusive praise to the organization, even though he maybe necessarily didn't, want to be traded. He told Jim Crane, do whatever you want to do, like whatever's best for the organization. It sounds like, he says he'll always, his home's in Houston. He won't ever move.
Yeah, no, he'll live here.
Yeah,
for sure.
And it sounded too like, he could be a potential front office guy down the road type of thing. So, it's a win-win. Like it's bittersweet, but it's good for him. It's good for us. And it's tough, but thanks for everything.
He pitched in 9 seasons with the Astros, which is kind of crazy because he's been on the team since 15. His highest innings pitched was 2021 at 162. He had only hit 100 innings pitched or more 4 times in his entire career, which kind of gives you an idea of the arm injury stuff that he dealt with. From after 2021, he never pitched more than 55 and a third innings over 5-year span. 47 and 2/3, 2 years he didn't pitch in a row, then 55 and a third, and then in a third, and then 39 and a third this year. So, I mean, it's a strange, he directly impacted the ALCS against the Yankees that helped the Astros get to their first World Series. In fact, people forget, he pitched in the elimination game, Game 7, didn't pitch great, but the game you beat the Dodgers, Lance McCullers came in and pitched and just kind of lost control. I think he hit a couple of batters. He just didn't have good control that game, but he did start that game. But with Lance, something that I really appreciated was he was, you know, I came from an era where you had the players were a little bit more accessible. There was not the social media, which I think really hurts the ability to bring athletes into the fold because they get the negative stuff. Like, they get overwhelmed by a lot of negative stuff from just random people on keyboards. And Lance was a guy that from an early stage, and I was able to get him in when I was at 790. I was able to get him in. He and I, you know, we were if not friends, we were, you know, kind of acquaintances. I mean, he would come do the radio. I got him in studio. He did the podcast with me and Eric Layden when we were doing our off script podcast. We talked MMA. He was a big UFC fight fan, and he and Carlos Correa used to do a podcast. I don't think they do it anymore, but Lance was one of those guys that was actually, you know, he liked talking about. He sent me a video of him dunking. He's like, don't tell anybody, because we had talked about it one time. Like, you can dunk? He goes, yeah, I can dunk. He sent me a video in a gym. And then I think he got a little sour with media in general, just because, you know, we had to say what it was. I mean, Lance wasn't healthy. It's not. It is what it is. I mean, but as a dude, Lance is a good dude. Lance does a lot of stuff in the community. He and his wife have been very, very active. Especially on this show, we joke, we laugh, we have a good time, we break balls. That's just how we are. But Lance is a good, Lance is a good dude. He just, what are you going to do? There's nothing we can say. He's just not pitching. He's never healthy. Yeah. But he'll be fine. And Houston will remember him fondly. It's just unfortunate that we never got to see, you know, the potential, because there was a lot of potential with Lance McCullers, and you could see it when he was on. That dude was nasty. But it is also a case study in arm injuries. I am curious why, if it was the way he threw his breaking pitches, you get a sense, because he had so much snap on it, that had to have an impact on the UCL injuries.
That's what I was going to ask you. Like, is this common for heavy curveball guys, especially in this new generation or new era of players? And then when he came back, too, like, he had a forearm injury as well. Like, my understanding was, like, he had to reinvent himself. Like, if you're a pitcher who your whole repertoire is based off this one pitch that you now can't throw, like, that is challenging.
After the 19 season, he was on our podcast, I think, in 2020 during COVID when they were going to come back, and we were talking about that. And he did, he said he had to change the way he threw. He changed some of his delivery. I think to take less torque off the arm. So he did have to make some changes in how he pitched, and then yet he still had arm issues. So a shame there. Also, yesterday word came out that Janice McNair had passed away, the wife of Bob McNair, the mother of Cal McNair and Carrie McNair. I don't know if there's other McNairs, but she was someone from the very jump. I mean, people... John and I were at 610 when they first got to town. They didn't have a team yet, even before the expansion draft that we sat in on the expansion draft, and I think we did a pre expansion draft show. It was kind of a weird setting, but everyone who worked at the Texans, Tony Wiley, Kevin Cooper, these people I spoke with who were from media relations and stuff, they all loved Janice McNair. Some of the former coaches like John Hoke I talked to, they all had just great things to say about her. And frankly, about Bob McNair as well. But they really loved Janice McNair. So I know that was one in the Houston Texans community that she's really going to be missed, has dealt with some issues over the last several years. And so it was great seeing the different. The Colts had a really nice statement. I saw the Arizona Cardinals and a couple organizations also. You don't often see that where they reach out. Maybe they do. I guess I don't see owners, pass away. She was not an active owner, obviously. But it was nice to see some other organizations kind of mention her.
Well, and obviously you've been involved, you know, at a much closer level than me and for quite some time. But just from my perspective, you know, she seems like she's just the sweetest lady, and she was well respected, class act. You know, I watched the interview they had a video of when D'Amico first met Janice, and it's like a 3-4 minute long video, and I'll have to post it. Someone posted on TikTok, but it's pretty. It kind of gets you goosebumps, and you kind of get a sense of the kind of lady she was, and you can tell she basically said like she was probably heavily involved in bringing D'Amico back. She told him, hey, you were my favorite player here. So there was a lot of mutual respect there.
Yeah, they listened to her. I mean, she had at different points, she had some say-so. I mean, that's they didn't want to, you know. I don't know about during the Bill. I think it was, you know, obviously Cal. Mm-hmm. And then Cal and Hannah really stepped up. But, yeah, she wasn't not aware, and she wasn't not involved at all. That was not the case, as you mentioned.
And you would think, especially after, you know, her husband Bob passed, like, hey, I'm still, you know, I'm still above you guys in a sense. But, I mean, you look at it, too, from, like, we all speculate, but I think it's pretty well understood that Hannah McNair seems to have an influence. So, like, you know, that's something that I played there. But you just, you know, you hear and you see all these stories, like Andre Johnson seems to have a great relationship with her, yeah. J.J. Watt, all these former greats. So, you know, I can't speak too much as far as knowing personal, all this stuff, but just from afar, from observing these things, she just seemed like, you know, the prototypical, just super class act, you know, very nice woman. Obviously, she played a role in bringing football back to Houston. So, you know, I and other Houston fans are forever grateful for that. But, you know, it'll be special this year for them to be able to honor her.
Yeah, it will. So there's Lance McCullers traded. Yeah, Janice McNair's passed away. And then we come back, we'll get to Tari Eason and Twitter. Tari has been active on Twitter since he signed his contract, but he hasn't really liked some of the interactions. He hasn't enjoyed listening to some people in the sports world, their comments, and so he lashed out yesterday. We'll get to that here in a second. 7:39 right here on ESPN 97.5.
Why don't you talk about a great place to watch?
You know what? I should call Saul and say, hey, why don't we roll some tacos up here? Why don't we get some breakfast tacos up here this morning? We got a guest in here, and Dell and I are always hungry. Dell's always like, when are they bringing food? When are they bringing food? And so, like, maybe today's the day. Maybe today's the day. Maybe I just order some to go and have them delivered. Who knows? I know when you go to the website, Taqueria Sarandas, I'm talking about Taqueria Sarandas, obviously. They have a catering option where you can click on the catering button. They can cater office luncheons. If you are doing birthday parties, quinceañeras, if you are doing, if you just want to have them out, you know, you just want to have them cater because you're going to have a kickoff party for the beginning of the NFL season. Dude, that's a great time to have Taqueria Sarandas as well. If you want to have them come out and provide you food, they've got takeout as well. And of course, I talk about the way that you can go in. For example, it's going to be a blast. Go into any of your local Taqueria Sarandas and go watch Spain versus Argentina in the finals on Sunday. It's a 2 o'clock match. Go in and check out. Get there early. Have your lunch early. When I say early, like get there at noon. Have your lunch, have some drinks, and then make sure you got a good spot and watch with some ardent soccer fans because that is going to be a lot of fun. Always a lot of fun watching your World Cup at Taqueria Sarandas. Taqueria Sarandas, locations all over the city of Houston. For your nearest location, go to TaqueriaSarandas.com.
You're listening to John and Lance.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
The tournament, formerly known as the British Open, now just known as the Open, is underway, and actually there's several players who are in the clubhouse. Well, a few. And they include, but the guy who's at the top of the leaderboard is Alex Smalley. A U.S. player is 5 under through 16. He's at the very top of the leaderboard. You've got 2 at 4 under, Daniel Brown and Sunghai Im. You've got Thomas Detry from wherever, -3. Robert McIntyre, Scottish, -3. Francisco Molinari. I forgot about Molinari. He's 3 under. Scottie Scheffler's 3 under after 13.
DeChambeau.
Bryson DeChambeau is 3 under after 13. So just to look at some of the U.S. players or making a little bit of noise up to this point. Let's see if Scottie Scheffler can finally get a major here. This is the one I'm waiting for, to see if he can finally pull one out this year. Tari Eason. I mentioned Tari Eason and Twitter. So Tari Eason, but right before it was going to be announced that he had signed an extension with the Houston Rockets for over $18 million per year, guaranteed. I can't remember. Do you remember the duration or the total amount of the contract by any chance?
I would want to say it was 3 years. I can look it up real quick.
Dale, do you remember what Tari made?
Oh, I'm sorry. A 5-year, $81.5 million contract.
Yeah, that's right. Fully guaranteed. So that was his deal. And
he said, I guess, bro, with the
shrug.
It was right before
I guess, bro. Right before he re-signed. Obviously, he had agreed to the deal, he knew, and it's before it came out. And everyone's like, huh, what's this? And then they saw the contract. And then, you know, you had the basic simps who like to get mad that he deserved more. He usually got more money. That's his money. It's not your money. He ain't going to, I promise you, no matter how much he makes, you can't hold any of it. And he's not buying
you a
sandwich.
Well, he lost money by not accepting it last year, right?
He did, and he's frustrated. Like, the offer the previous year, I wanted to say was $20 million a year, the one that they that had been reported before the season that he turned down. He bet on himself and then just was just way too erratic and played poorly at the end of the year. And so bet on himself, still comes out a winner in life with the total contract. And he just wasn't happy about it. And I get that. I mean, I get that you took your shot and you didn't do it. He wanted to go somewhere else and get starters minutes, and that's not what he's going to get here, at least not in the short term. And so there's some people who were kind of turned off with his reaction where, you know, they're excited to have their player back. Like, I'm excited to have Tari Eason back. I mean, yep. I'm sorry you're not going to make as much as you had previously been offered, but that's not really my concern, to mm-hmm. be honest with you. I just hope the Rockets, like, you're taken care of for life. I'm just hoping that you are good for the Rockets and the Rockets can play at a high level and compete with those two ass kickers we have in the Western Conference now in San Antonio and Oklahoma City. But Tari has heard some negativity from fans, and I guess he's heard negativity from sports talk hosts, people on TV. I don't know where all he's getting this from, but yesterday he posted, so many opinions on my game, y'all. I swear to God, you couldn't walk a mile in my shoes, 100. Y'all can't even be great at the little things at your own respective jobs, and no one cares what y'all do. And I felt like that's a shot at Dell, if I'm being honest. But
does it say at Dell right there?
That's what I'm saying. Why is he subtweeting you, Dell? That's the jacked up part. So many opinions on my game, y'all. Well, you are a professional athlete, and people talk about you. See, the fact that people care enough to talk about you, where you're somebody who's relevant enough that lots of people want to talk about, if you're playing well or not playing well, either way, means that you are in a sport and you are on a team that people care about. Mm-hmm. And that care factor equals TV ratings, equals TV revenue, equals big contracts. If people didn't care enough to talk about you, then that means you're in a sport and a team where you're not really relevant on the national stage. Your contract's a whole lot lower. It's in the unwritten social contract between professional athlete and fan/media. It's not necessarily great, but one of the things, like, you hear about, this happens with celebrities, no matter if you're sports or. You give up some privacy. There's just no way around it.
Yep.
You can't just go out to dinner and not be bothered. You're going to give up or to have pictures taken of you. You give up some privacy. Now, the flip side of that is you're famous. You get free stuff all the time. You get paid a tremendous amount of money. You have access to things no one else will ever have access to unless they're in your shoes. So it's a trade-off. It's one of the oldest trade-offs that we've ever seen. It's a more pronounced trade-off with social media and with the opinions and with people becoming more aggressive with everything they do. But Tari's frustrated at hearing people talk about the things he doesn't do well. And I get it. I get that frustration. But you spend a lot of time online in Twitter in terms of engagement, creating content. I just feel like this is just such a bad look for Tari because you've already created some rumblings and negativity, you know, with your prior tweet. Nothing good is going to come from this for Tari.
So I don't know exactly if it's just like he's become like a recent debate, but like first off with like the I guess bro tweet, like I saw that and I was like, is this correlated to his contract? Obviously the timing, but like if it wasn't, like maybe clarify that. Like instead, like, there's like this, you know, mystery element, so we're not quite sure. So that's kind of like, okay, whatever. I didn't really buy into it. A lot of people got mad about it. But then this one now, like, you know, you kind of alluded to it. Like, you can't be online. I mean, you know, I, as someone who is chronically online, and I am just like a, you know, wannabe journalist, fan, whatever I call myself, I deal with trolls myself all the time. And yeah, I have to learn myself not to respond to certain people or not to take certain things in. That's just like from a low totem pole on the sports spectrum. Whereas now, if you're this superstar athlete, like, I get it. Like, you know, I can't stand the people. You have to understand, like, what's going on. The people that are trash talking you, like you said, yeah, they're, many of them are probably below you and don't, you know, do the things that you do. Easier said than done. Like, I don't appreciate people who, like, do personal insults and take it too far. But at the same time, you have to realize that's not real. I know it's tough for these athletes to ask them to tune that out all the time. Mm-hmm. I think you have a factor here, too. You have Kevin Durant on your team who is known to clap back, and you're not quite Kevin Durant's level as far as superstardom and players, so I don't know if that's a factor. Also, like, the way he's raised, his mother's a factor, which I don't...
She's very active on Twitter.
So, I mean, like, I can't sit there and knock her for that, too. I mean, you know, obviously it's probably not the best thing, but as long as she can handle it, it's fine, but... So maybe there's some precedent set there. It's like, that's just kind of how they roll. The one thing you do ask is, like, you hope this doesn't affect how he plays, because now you don't want him to take it to have this personal hard-on with fans in Houston, right? Whereas this is something that could happen no matter where you are. It's not necessarily partial to Houston and our fan base per se.
Well, so some of the – I got a few things to comment on. Here's some of the comments. Chris Gorman says, I don't listen to – opinions of anyone that doesn't pay my bills. Grateful and appreciative. That's a good way to look at things. If you had that level, and there are some players who don't care, like everything rolls off their back. They don't listen. They don't care. And there are others, and this is a natural sentiment to be a little sensitive about, you know, criticism. It's just what's, I've been sensitive about criticism during my, it, things bother me way less now, way less than they used to. But especially early on in the middle of my career, it does, like, it does sting when you hear things. People, I have people come after me, but they don't know me about this. I don't have credibility with my draft stuff. I this, that, and the other. It doesn't, like, I don't care. What I get upset with is people who act like they have their opinions. Like, where am I coming up with my opinion? Like, I've done all this work, this mm-hmm. amount of work, and somebody who's barely seen someone, that bothers me on a different level. But, you know, the name calling, the clown emoji stuff, that I don't even really care. Northside Mike, who I've known for a while, This is kind of how he said, exercise a little humility, bro. People are going to have opinions of you. That's the price of being a pro athlete. Take the criticism and use it as motivation. Deep down, that's what the fans want to see instead of you trading jabs with them on X. Another person said, whoa, you're talking to a fan base like that? I'm a fan of yours, but this is an incredibly ignorant statement by you. And then someone else who's a Steelers fan, I don't even think they're a Rockets fan, they said, this just earned a lifetime hate watch. And then they called him the P word. You're definitely your mother's son, because she's known to get after it a little bit. Imagine every time a forklift driver tried to move supplies to its destination, they crashed the forklift into something and dropped the supplies every time. That's you in basketball when the ball touches your hands. See, that's going to make Tari mad if he read that. I will say, I started going down the road with you here, and I wanted to wait so I could do it organically on the air.
Yeah.
So I asked where you were when Arian Foster was leading the Houston, when he was the big-time Houston Texan. Where were you in the Texans in, like, 2010 to 2013-14?
I was in graduate school at Incarnate Word playing my final season of football there. So.
Okay. What position did you play?
Receiver.
Okay. So
wide receiver.
Were you a slot receiver?
I was a Z.
Were you crafty? You were a Z?
Yeah, but I could play Y. Like at SFA, I played my undergrad there. Hold on,
save it, because we got to do this in a different segment. Okay. I got questions.
All right.
I ask because what I saw is someone who was an early adapter of Twitter in 08. It was a great place, man. It was so much fun. It was much smaller, but you could have conversations with people that you had access to that you wouldn't have had otherwise. I was able to interact with listeners like I'd never been able to before in real time, and we had a very tight-knit group of listeners when it was 1560. And but what happened is there began to be a change around 2011-ish, and it started getting a little that's about when it started. Things started getting a little nastier, and a guy that I thought really went from being fun to, like, sour and dour was Arian Foster. And I think Arian was direct. I watched. I saw his comments. I know one of our listeners was a guy, Lamont, was a guy he would get into it with. And so we got to break it, Glenn. So I want to talk about that in a little bit about how social media has really changed the relationship between player-athlete. And I don't think it's ever coming back to where, you know, where it used to be, unfortunately. Let's break it right now. Glenn Davis, our soccer aficionado, our expert, is going to come up next. And he's brought to you this week and, I'm sorry, today and every day by Kaplan Sinus Relief. Coming up next, keep it right here. Glenn Davis breaking down yesterday's match and the champion and the finals coming up on Sunday.
Houston's only FM sports station, ESPN 97.5.